Welcome to In Season, exploring farming and gardening in the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm your host, Teresa Retzloff. Autumn is a time of cooler, shorter days, rainstorms mixed with sparkling golden sun, and the prospect of transitioning our gardens and farms from summer abundance to winter rest. One task more and more gardeners and farmers are taking the time to accomplish is to sow some cover crop seed to help prevent winter soil erosion and help nurture the soil for next year's growing season. I recently made a trip into Portland to visit my good friend Naomi, the founder of Naomi's Organic Farm Supply, to pick up our farm's annual bulk order of cover crop seeds. Naomi kindly took time to sit down with me in her lovely store and chat about growing cover crop, fall chores, and planting garlic. So welcome, Naomi.
Hi, Teresa. Thanks so much for inviting me on your show today.
Well, I love coming to your store, and I know a lot of other small farmers. You service a lot of people, not just in Portland. I mean, it's a lot of people around the Northwest Oregon area, a lot of small farms and home gardeners. What's the farthest you have someone come from here?
Oh, gosh. Well, we definitely have people coming down from Washington and Southern Oregon coming up from there. We've got people that pass through from different states as well, as we just had a whole bunch of people that are moving, or a couple that's moving to Australia, load up a whole bunch of seeds.
Oh my goodness, to take to Australia.
Yeah, and we've had some other people come from other countries where we're like, don't know if it's legal for you to take them back, but they're figuring it out and really excited to have a source of organic seeds and things that they're not able to find elsewhere.
Yeah, and that's the key thing too, is you really focus on organics here at your store. So for people who really want it to be organic at home or on their farm, you really are one of the best local sources for that as well. And we're talking today specifically about cover crop, because I came in to buy bulk amounts of organic cover crop seed from you and thought I wanted to talk with you a little bit about it, because I know for a lot of, especially home gardeners, the concept of cover crop seeds and growing cover crops in the fall is still a little bit mysterious. So maybe talk about what it is and why we do it.
Yeah, so on the cover crop seeds, we do specialize in carrying organic cover crop seeds whenever they're available. And there are some seeds that just tend to not be grown in a certified organic way. None of them are genetically modified or engineered, so we're comfortable with carrying those, quote, conventional or non-organic options. And basically, the cover crop seeds are a wonderful way to sort of hold space in your ground. So they're helping to block weeds from germinating over winter, because they're taking that space and growing there. In addition to that, they're fixing nitrogen in the soil if they're one of the legumes or clovers. And if they're one of the grain or grass crops, they're also sending out a nice deep root structure that's going to help loosen up your soil. And when it ends up decaying, creating basically its own compost and air structure down below as well. And then some people end up cutting their cover crop back and using it as a mulch or in their compost. And others turn it in and let it die back as what's considered more of a green manure. So that you're also getting the fertilizer from the green matter of that plant breaking down in your soil.
So I've heard it described as you're growing your own compost over the winter and then digging it into your soil and letting it break down. How long? So people, this is a great time of year to be planting your cover crop. You want it to be like when you're pulling things out of the ground, you're clearing your beds, you know, whether it's, you know, a 2-foot bed or a 200 foot bed, you're clearing them out and you're not going to grow anything over the winter. So you want something that's going to help prevent soil erosion.
Exactly.
And then maybe also do some good over the winter.
Yeah. So one of the tricks that you can do that's easier to do on a home garden than if you're in a big farm setting, but on a smaller scale, often you can trim up plants like your tomatoes, you can cut back certain squash plants, basically create some space underneath in your beds, get in there, rake it up a little bit, sow your cover crop seed, and then put a little bit of compost and or a light sprinkling of straw back over it, and then water that. So if there's times where for next year you're able to plant even in mid-September, early September, the sooner you're able to get it down, the more you're going to have it up and growing as we head into these shortening days.
Yeah. Because that's really the trick, is like getting it. I mean, that's something I've really struggled with on our farm, is wanting those crops to go as long as possible. But then if you leave it too long, you've lost your germination window, and it's too cold and too wet for the seed to successfully germinate, and you're not going to get much matter growing.
Yeah, and the days keep getting shorter. So one good thing to always remember is that should the days get away on you and suddenly you find yourself in mid to late October and really feeling like, I don't know if it's too late or it's a particularly stormy fall and it just doesn't seem suitable, covering the ground in any way. So whether it's an unsexy tarp, plastic,
yeah,
cardboard, burlap,
straw. Yeah.
Exactly. So it could be something where you're, you know, specifically putting down cardboard and straw or wood chips, leaf matter over the top that's all planning to break down, or whether you're just literally blocking the rain from washing away your soil all winter with a tarp or plastic or other thing. Basically, you're keeping the soil safe. You're going to have worms under there. You're going to have some of your plant debris breaking down. And then the magical thing is that in February or March, you can get back out there again when we're having a little bit of a warm, sunny spell. The days are already getting longer by February in a very healthy way for plants. And that's a great time to sow your cover crop seed. So that's a time where you can roll back the tarp and get in there and sow, or sow right into the mulch that you've made if you're planning to have that continue to break down over the spring.
Because you only really need, even if you just get a few months of cover crop growth.
Oh, yeah, you can get
growth. And as you said, as the days are getting longer, you're going to need a lot of germination and extreme rapid growth. And that's going to make a huge difference for how much you then till in. Because usually we're tilling in, well, depending on when you want to start growing. But usually, I think for most home gardeners, it's looking at April, May.
Yeah, and so you can still get a gorgeous stand of cover crop in that amount of time. And the main thing is just that you're not wanting to let the soil be totally bare over winter when we're getting that rainfall and wind and other things that are going to wash away.
Wash away the soil that you've been working so hard to build up, and then it compacts it, too. And it just makes for all kinds of problems later on.
Yeah, so the more you can mulch or cover.
I have certainly learned that lesson on our farm. I know there's been times when I've been more successful than others at getting my cover crop sown or getting mulch done, and I've really seen the difference. And whenever I've stupidly left some ground bare for any amount of time, you really feel it the next year. You really feel it. And it takes so long to get back to it. So if you have the opportunity to sow cover crop, do it. And are there some varieties of seeds that are better for like cold weather germination than others?
Yeah. So in the things that are going to germinate, we try to separate out what things are best grown in summer. So for example, buckwheat, some people will still do a late summer or even early fall sowing, knowing that it's going to winter kill when we get a hard frost or freeze. And Sudan grass would be another one where some people will still do that later summer sowing because it grows fast and they specifically want it to winter kill and be a mulch that's holding space over winter.
So it's basically the plant dies but the dead plant debris is left on the soil.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And then we used to have that happen more with spring oats where when we got a more serious winter, the oats would put on this great growth, die back, and then be this great mulch that was really easy to incorporate when farms need to get in early in the spring.
Yeah.
We tend to be warming up a bit, and so the oats aren't necessarily dying back over the winter to create that mulch, but in a really great way, they're often really easy for a gardener and a farmer to turn in when they're getting into an area earlier in the spring.
Okay.
Whereas triticale, which is a winter wheat and rye grain cross, has an amazing root structure that's excellent for a cover crop and loosening up soils, but it's a little bit still, it's trying to more actively grow in the spring when you might want to be getting in there early. So we've got more farms that have been turning towards the oats because it's a bit easier to deal with.
Yeah.
And kind of having that aha moment for a gardener as well to say, oh, you know, anything that makes it easier for us to turn in even on a smaller scale at home in our gardens is great as well. So
because that can really be the challenge in the spring then. You've got this, a lot of organic matter, this big mass, all these roots growing down into the soil, and you've got to get it to break up and break down really quickly so that you can plant into it. So how, if you want to plant, say, in early to mid-April, how early would you need to break it down?
So you're usually needing a few weeks for the plant to decompose. So there are some areas where if you're, you know, you're going to want to get in there earlier, you're going to be getting out and your cover crop may be considerably shorter at that time. Yeah. Sometimes people will just cut it back with a sharp machete or even literally like knock it over flat and then cover it with something very solid, again, tarp, plastic, cardboard, so that the soil is also getting to dry out a little bit for your planting purposes.
We've had a lot of success with doing that on our farm, and that's really making a big difference for how fast it breaks down, but then also drying out the soil. Yeah.
Great. Yeah, it's usually a really good combo, and just realizing that if you've got things where you're not going to be planting some of your really heat-loving crops until later, then planning out accordingly and saying, like, oh, I'm going to let those beds go a bit longer. Whereas when you're getting in with your early greens or your peas, that's going to be a totally different set of timing. But also nice that you don't have to manage all of your cover crop at one time. You can take these smaller size chunks based on what you're planting.
Yeah. So let some of it grow longer and really just wait. If you think about maybe a month before you know you're going to want to plant in that bed, that's when you would start cutting down and prepping and getting the things to break down. Are there other varieties that are good for winter hardiness?
Yeah, so, and also for getting in a little later, like we were talking about ryegrass, the mm-hmm. annual kind,
yeah.
very different from the perennial grasses that people can get scared of,
yeah,
can be really good at germinating quickly, germinating in colder, darker days, and really helping with weed suppression,
yeah,
as well as any of the grasses and grains are acting as basically a nurse crop best friend
yeah.
to any legumes you're planting. So hairy vetch, common vetch, both also tend to germinate really well in the cold, and as mm-hmm. it gets a little later, favas can do the same. We've got the bell bean. Sometimes Diana can be a specified variety.
Mm-hmm.
Broad beans can also be sown, broad fava beans often into November, whereas usually your peas and crimson clover, you want to kind of get in there by mid-October usually.
Yeah.
And again, that can all vary by what kind of year we're having and people's soil conditions, and there's a lot of different factors, but sometimes some things will not germinate or come in as strongly in this year, but may still totally come on in the new year, where you're
yeah.
like, I thought nothing germinated, and then suddenly you've got this beautiful stand of clover or peas that just
yeah.
might have been a little slower.
Yeah,
I've definitely had, just to confess my shame, I mean, have sown cover crop seed, you know, early November, mm-hmm. and the annual rye hairy vetch combination really has been pretty successful out at the coast for germination. And, you know, maybe I don't get a huge amount of organic matter, you know, but there's enough that it holds the soil through those winter months, and then in February, it really puts on some lush growth.
Yeah.
So it can work.
Definitely.
It can work.
Yeah, and part of it's just the great thing about a garden scale is
yeah.
that we have so much more ability to experiment.
Yeah.
On a farm, you're spending a lot more money, you're covering a lot more ground, you've got this
yeah.
labor, you do it. If it doesn't work, or
there's
not the way you want, it's a lot harder. Whereas on a garden setting, it's
yeah.
so much easier for us to experiment, to make mistakes that seem terrible that work wonderfully. It's like some of the best things about gardening is just like this. We don't have any high stakes.
Yeah.
And whatever we spend generally on our garden scale situation also is like, it's like if we'd gone out to dinner or, you know, we've got fancy coffees for a number of days, but instead we got to experiment and see, like, can we still plant this thing late
yeah.
or early or...
Yeah.
And keeping that energy and excitement about it and not getting hard on yourself or your soil or your property or
yeah.
microclimate.
Yeah.
It's a healthy reminder. Just
absolutely.
Really
well, just being kind to yourself, you know, again, if you don't get things in on time. I mean, there's definitely times when I've held cover crop seed and then sown it late winter because it's like, oh, I really missed that window. What can you do?
We're going to take a break now to remind you that you're listening to Coast Community Radio on KMUN 91.9 FM and KTCB Tillamook at 89.5 FM, and we're streaming live at coastradio.org. If you're just joining us for In Season, this week we're talking about growing cover crop seed and planting garlic with Naomi, the founder of Naomi's Organic Farm Supply in Portland.
Are there other soil... building things or things that you would do in the fall? Like, I know a lot of people talk about adding lime in the fall. Are you a fall lime advocate or spring lime?
Yeah.
Or
so
both?
Fall and spring both tend to be great times because they're when we're getting in there and working the soil.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the main ideas with the lime is that our soils naturally are quite acidic,
mm-hmm.
often somewhere in the 5 range or the low 6s for pH. And for most of the plants we want to grow, blueberries aside and
yeah.
native plants, that like it more acidic, most of them want to be in the kind of 6.5 to 6.8 range. So an average recommendation rate for your garden would be 5 pounds per 100 square feet or a 50-pound bag per 1,000 square feet every year in the fall or the spring. And then if your soil is anywhere in the low 6s, the soil labs tend to triple that rate. So calling for 150 pounds per 1,000 square feet
yeah.
or 15 per 100. If it's anywhere in the 5s, they will quintuple it. So that's 250 per 1,000 square feet or 25 pounds per 100 square foot, 10 by 10 area.
And you just need to do this once a year. I mean, it's not like, and more is not always better. It's just...
Yeah, it tends to be hard for people to overdo. If anything, most of us are underliming mm-hmm. our soils. In the case of a farm, they're usually getting a soil test for sure, because that's
yeah.
one of the keys, that once your soil is in the right pH range, the plants can uptake the fertilizer you're adding and the nutrients from cover crop and
mm-hmm.
other things, where when it's more acidic, it's harder for them to uptake the other good things you're doing
yeah.
and be healthier plants. And excitingly, lime tends to be very affordable. So on a farm setting, it'll be a little scary because they'll get a soil test back that'll call for 10,000 pounds of lime per acre. And that's a serious thing. But in a home garden setting, it tends to be one of the most affordable things that you can do for your soil that really helps bring everything that you're doing to fruition.
And even if you haven't had a soil test, you can pretty much assume that you're going to need to add some lime to your soil, especially if it's a new garden, if it's soil that hasn't really been worked at all. And it takes a while to slowly start to shift your pH. I mean, it can take years. I think I remember talking to some soil scientists at OSU, and they were saying that it really was about 4 years from when you, like, if you went from just grass, just sod, to a vegetable garden, it would take about 4 years of really working your soil and adding lime on a pretty regular basis to then start to be at a point where it's like, oh, hey, you're starting to see some shift and change. And I certainly can speak to that. It seems like it takes about that long.
Yeah. And it's also something you're ideally wanting to work into the top 6 inches. So sometimes if you put it down in the fall, but you're not going to be working up the beds, it's going to be slowly working its way down with the rain in the winter. But then when you get in the spring, you're going to be incorporating it more. Or in the spring, you're getting out there, you're turning tilling in your cover crops or tilling, and you're putting it and you're getting it worked into the top 6 or so inches at that point. But there's still usually some moisture around also, which really helps
help
everything
break
settled.
Down, yeah.
So the liming is a great thing that we just don't think about it as a fertilizer per se, because it's not adding any of those macronutrients, but basically just think like it's a key that's making those available to the plant.
Yeah, someone described it to me once, like all your these other nutrients in your soil are kind of locked in a box. And until you reach a high enough pH, the box remains locked. But once you hit that magic kind of, oh, hey, we're around, 6.5, heading towards 7, the box starts to unlock and the plants can access those nutrients. So that's why we do lime.
Gorgeously stated. I'm totally
I think that was actually in one of our Master Gardener classes out in Clatsop County Master Gardeners. I think the person who was doing the class on soils described it thusly. And and it was really helpful for me to finally understand, well, why is soil pH so key?
Yeah. And other times it's like, you're like, I've just got this expensive fertilizer, I've grown this cover crop, and basically you're adding to your box.
Yeah.
You're investing in this box, but your plants can't get in it.
Yeah.
Or not as well as they could. And so it can sometimes feel like those other things that you're focusing on more aren't working.
Yeah.
And it's really just the pH.
I know.
So
I was thinking, just in wandering around your lovely store here, I'm also noticing all the beautiful garlic and shallots that you have sitting out. And so this is also a good time of year to be planting things like that. So talk a little bit about planting garlic and shallots, because I know a lot of people love to grow those things.
Yeah, those two are so fun to grow. And the nice thing about them is often you want to try to be a good squirrel, get your seed early because it can run out. So whether you're ordering it online or getting it at a store like ours or directly from a farmer, get the seed that you want. You can get your varieties and you can save them. So with some of the hardnecks, you got to remember that they might only have a shelf life of 4 to 5 months.
Yeah.
So if somebody harvested those earlier on, you might already want to be planting them in September and October. If it's a soft neck variety of garlic that could potentially take you almost all the way into your new harvest, planting that in November or even into January can often be fine.
It's as long as your soil's in shape to plant,
and you are in shape to want to be outside. If it's pouring rain and muddy, you might not want to be out there. But the nice thing to know is I've even had some garlic where it really seemed to be sprouting, turning, potentially rotting, and then we just were like, we're just going to put it in. Like, we think we've missed the time, and have gotten amazing heads of garlic. So it wants to grow and become a plant, and it's just nice that you have this window of time where, again, if you have other crops that are still finishing up and you don't have the space yet to prepare your garlic beds, you've got time.
Yeah.
Often planting around Halloween or even Thanksgiving is fine.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you've got beds ready in mid-September, go for it. Because even if we had too much green growth happen and we got a really hard freeze that knocks some of it back, it's usually still going to bounce right back. And we're not as cold as so much of the eastern parts of the country are at this latitude.
Yeah.
So we've really got a great condition for it. Sometimes you can get, the main problem is sometimes there's a rust that you can get, and it can come from other grasses. So you may have perfectly clean garlic seed and cloves, and it's not carried in the seed. It could be on the wrappers, but it would be very visible.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that's kind of a trick. Some people get it, and it affects their crop really bad. Other people don't have any problems with it, or just a little aesthetics that once they peel it away, it's fine.
Is there any treatment that you can do for it, or an organic treatment you can do for it? Not really.
Not necessarily, but the healthier your conditions are, the better. So, again, liming for your garlic beds, making sure they've either got a good supply of phosphorus naturally in the soil or that you're adding some, fertilizing again in the spring.
And describe a good source of phosphorus. What would be the kind of thing that you would add
One of the mineral-based ones is rock phosphate, where there's about 3% initially available and another 17% over a span of years. Mm-hmm. So great if you own your property. And otherwise, fish bone or cow bone meal would be two other sources. Sometimes in that magical lockbox of fertility, there's already phosphorus in our soils, but it really needs that pH adjustment to be available. So sometimes that fish bone or cow bone is more helpful because
it's more
providing a little
available.
Extra
yeah.
out of the lockbox.
Yeah.
But even just some alfalfa pellets can be great. Just getting some fertility, compost, worm castings, mulching with straw or well-chopped
leaves. Do you do that? So when you plant your garlic, I know some people do this, some people don't. You plant your garlic bulbs, and then some people will put a layer of straw mulch over it to help keep the soil warmer and protect from like a hard freeze. If we have like a super hard freeze in the winter, do you recommend that?
And it keeps weeds down. It's just because you've got this crop where it's like one every 6 inches or so, which you could plant on a diagonal. You can get them pretty close together.
Mm-hmm.
But also it kind of looks like a thick grass when it comes up. So the more that you can kind of suppress that or know that like, oh, I might get some oat or wheat or whatever my straw is, like that's easy to pull out of the straw itself. But not having hard, true weed friends come up around your garlic.
Well, and one more way to also protect the soil.
Exactly.
So unless you're doing a really thick layer of mulch or compost on top of your garlic cloves, that soil could wash away if it's just left bare. So the straw can really help with that.
Yeah, and even if it's compost, just still having that layer of straw. Straw is used for erosion control. Mm-hmm. It's specified on construction jobs.
Yeah.
So it's just something in our home garden is realizing, like, you just don't ever want bare soil. Like, it will erode, and bare soil could be soil with compost on it is still not enough.
But having
some leaf mulch on top of it or that straw is really going to help give that extra blanket to tuck it in.
There's a point in the spring when I have to pull it back because it starts to really harbor slugs in there. And if I don't pull it back, say, like by March, I've lost beds of garlic to like the slugs just coming in and mowing them down. And so if I can pull back some of the straw, I found this with my dahlias too. Sometimes if I've mulched my dahlias with straw, they love it, but so do the things that love to eat them.
Yeah,
so
that also might be one of those things where it's more of a coastal consideration, where in some areas, if even in the valley in here, we still have a lot of slugs, but we might not have as excellent slug conditions.
We have excellent slug conditions.
Right? So so that's a great consideration to just keep an eye on, as well as when you want to go in to do spring fertility, unless you're watering in fish fertilizer, you might be coming in and scratching in some nitrogen and or mixed fish bone, cow bone type source for that spring feeding, and getting in there and scratching that into the soil is great, or working that straw back a little bit so you can even water in some fertility.
Mm-hmm.
But the slug consideration is always important. And then remembering too, if you use a slug bait at any point, to use one of the ones that is the iron phosphate that is organically allowed for being safe for wildlife and pets and children versus the metaldehyde kind, which is still commonly sold but is very toxic
and
to everybody.
So, yeah.
It's the quick acting but acting bad on everyone. So just being aware that there are a number of different brands that are organically allowable and safe for everybody, and just to make sure to choose one of those.
Yeah, well, just to be safe, especially for, I know so many people have, you know, pets and small children out in their gardens, and you really want to make sure that the things you have on the ground are things that they could pick up and put in their mouth.
Exactly, yeah. And if they're testing it out, like, not like any of them are going to be tasty, but you just don't want anyone to take a test and have it be toxic, so.
So for garlic, how long does it stay in the ground? I mean, when are you, because that can tie up bed space for a long time. I think for a lot of home gardeners, they're not thinking about that. It's like, I'm going to plant my garlic here and that's going to be great, but oh, hey, I want to plant my peas there in the spring. So you've got to be able to leave that in until what, June, July?
Yeah, it's kind of like a baby. It's kind of a 9-month-ish operation. So just think that if you were planting it in the earliest in mid-September, you're usually getting it out maybe mid-June, but often harvesting around some point in July.
Mm-hmm.
So a great way to think about it is to think, what do you want to plant for fall eating and or overwintering? And think about having those crops follow where your garlic was is one option.
That's a good way to think about it.
But rotating the garlic around is great as well for keeping disease pressure down. Some people have problems with it. Some people say they plant it in the same time every year and it's fine.
Yeah.
But it, like most crops, can benefit from being rotated if possible.
So not, and also not growing it where you've grown other onions. Anything else in the Allium family like your leeks, your shallots, your green onions, any of those. I know. Crop rotation is tricky. I mean, and I know some people who never rotate and don't ever have any problems, and people who religiously rotate and don't have problems, and people who do both and have terrible problems. So clearly there's other things going on that you need to pay attention to. But
yeah. I think just trying to keep a healthy garden
ecosystem
in general is great, and knowing that if you can rotate or it's something that is exciting to you as a gardener, by all means do it.
Yeah.
If you can't, don't let it stop you from planting. So if you have either an area where you want to expand to a new area, and you can plan ahead and just have it in a succession of cover crops, that's great. Say you get an illness or an injury or someone you love does, and you just need to hold your garden, instead of just leaving and abandoning it, sow everything in cover crops. So basically just think the cover crops can be used as a placeholder, whether you have a new patch of land that you just want to take care of and start nurturing, or whether you yourself have an injury or an illness with yourself or someone in your family and you can't garden, cover crop. And just, you can do a number of successions of cover crop. You can also sow cover crop and then let it go to seed.
Yeah.
Intentionally knock it back if you have the time for that and let it germinate again in its own mulch and just kind of keep going.
Yeah.
So it's a great placeholder. And then otherwise, just if you're working up certain areas, it's something where you're doing rotations and you'd be like, oh, I'm going to plant that later for a fall crop and I just pulled this thing from summer or early spring and I want to do some buckwheat for a couple months in this bed. Then buckwheat's one where in 60 days you can have the buckwheat come up and do its thing.
It grows really fast.
Yeah. And then the Sudan grass people are liking a lot as well because it, you can mow it back a few times and it'll just keep sending deeper roots, but it doesn't overwinter. It's not a perennial. So when you're done with it, it can just be totally done and you either have this huge mulch and or the roots breaking down in the soil. And
that would be good for someone with heavy soil, like if you have a heavy clay or something
for
like that. That's a really good one for breaking that up.
Yeah. One of the other considerations about when things go to flower. So we're often wanting to get into garden beds, so we want to turn them in before or just as something is maybe starting to flower, but well before it sets seed, because then it's getting harder and woodier. That said, there's things like crimson clover and phacelia that are just beautiful for pollinators. So what I've learned is that it's really helpful to make a patch that you're not turning under. That's like your little mini pollinator habitat row.
Yeah.
Or the edge of your garden or something. Is think about it that you're actually sowing a beautiful flower that's going to provide a lot of nectar early in the season for all of the honeybees and the native bees and other pollinators. So,
you know, I definitely like your approach of just experimenting and not beating yourself up if you don't get things done in time. Naomi, thank you so much for taking time to talk about this with. It was fun to just come in and see you anyway, and I love that I'm loaded up with many, many 50-pound bags of lots of cover crop seed. I'm excited about that. Excited to get back and get it sown.
Yes, it's been great watching your farm grow over all these years that we've known each other, and also just the coast is so beautiful and such a great climate for growing and gardening and farming, and just wonderful what everyone's doing out there. I always love to see it when I'm visiting.
Oh, wonderful. I hope you come back soon.
Thank you so much, Teresa.
Take care, Naomi. If you garden or farm on the coast, you don't have to travel all the way to Portland to buy cover crop seeds. Coastal cover crop seed sources can be found at Brim's Farm and Garden in Astoria, Two Old Goats in Napa, and the Tillamook Creamery Association's Farm Store in Tillamook. Many catalogs offer cover crop seeds as well. If you are traveling to Portland, however, I urge you to stop by Naomi's Organic Farm Supply on Powell Boulevard and check out their wonderful supply of bulk organic fertilizers, tools, books, seeds, and more, and say hello to the resident bunny rabbits while you're there. You can find out more about them online at naomisorganic.com. Thanks for joining us for this week's In Season. I hope you get your outdoor fall chores done in a timely manner and have a nice hot cup of tea waiting for you when you head inside to dry off. Talk to you again soon.